Hello and welcome, everyone. This is the LaRouche Show. It's Saturday, July 22nd. I will be the host today, Marcia Mary Baker. I'm with the economic staff of Executive Intelligence Review News Service. And today, for the next hour, and we invite your emails, and we can take them on the show or get in touch afterwards, but for the next hour, we have three guests, one here in the studio and one in California and Texas, on some momentous developments. This is without exaggeration in the Americas, but bearing on the whole world's strategic situation. And I hope many of you listened live or soon thereafter to the July 20th international webcast given by Mr. LaRouche in Washington, D.C. He touched upon some of this. But we are going to have our Ibero-American editor of EIR, Dennis Small, is in the studio today. Welcome, Dennis.
Thanks, Marcia. Pleasure to be here.
And I'd like to say who else and then make a few introductory remarks and then jump off into this with Dennis. Natalie Lofgren in Texas, welcome.
Hello, thank you.
And Freddie Coronel in Los Angeles. Hi, Freddie.
Hello.
And these are leaders of our LaRouche youth movement in Houston and Los Angeles and on these border states in North America between the United States and Mexico. And that is the leading focus of where we're going to start today, that you've had tremendous manifestations of change, of things moving in a hopeful direction for mankind, with 1.5 million people last Sunday, the 16th, in Mexico City on the Cathedral Square, part of an ongoing mobilization since the July 2nd election, and vote fraud took place there. And that's what Dennis Small will be talking about in a minute. But you're talking about a mobilization for justice, economic justice, justice of citizenry in the nation states. And just a couple other things in that regard, that it was just yesterday that a two-day meeting finished of heads of state of many nations in South America, and it was in Argentina, in Cordoba. And this was a meeting of the grouping called Mercosur, and a theme there again had to do with hopeful directions for new strategic alliances for economic justice. And so this is part of the positive directionality of certain places in the world, like some of you will have followed the Shanghai Cooperation Council in East Asia, that of nations and individuals moving in opposition to otherwise what's ahead, and what Mr. LaRouche talked about July 20th, the crash of the rotten financial monetary system as it is, and what's going to come out of that. Now, you know, Mr. LaRouche has stressed, you're talking about months, like something like September. He'll say he doesn't have a crystal ball, but his forecasts are absolutely dead on. Namely, the world financial monetary system cannot hold together. And that's the background to keep in mind for the events hour by hour that are horrible unfolding in Southwest Asia, that is to say, in the fighting and Israel's assaults on Lebanon and the Palestinian territories. That whole situation is developing, but the logic of that isn't as you may see on Fox News or similar places where they'll say Israel was affronted, the Hezbollah stole two Israeli soldiers, so it's tit for tat. So forget that. Behind the scenes of this kind of war thrust, because you have it in Iraq, you have it in Afghanistan, are those financial interests who are part of this rotten system, know it's that the thing is collapsing, they're part of that, and intend to be on top of the heap by owning things out from under national governments and from the national interest. So that's what we're up against. I just recommend keep that in mind the whole time as we hear terrific firsthand reports of what's happening here in Mexico and in South America, because our marching orders, which we like to give at the beginning of the show and people can repeat as we go along, are as we want to get out here in the United States. I'll just speak of that, although we may have people online from around the world and invite their participation. But here in the United States, Congress is still in session, such as it is, and the it's up to our mobilization to force the issue of federal action to restore the nation state here, in particular on the industrial shutdown we're seeing in the auto machine tool sector. And we have the LaRouche Political Action Committee effort that has circulating the Economic Recovery Act of 2006. And this is what ought to be done. And who's opposing it? These kinds of financial globalist interests whose name we're making known in infamy everywhere. Felix Rohatyn, who calls himself a Democrat, George Shultz, who's nominally the Republican. But this kind of gang, we're exposing that, and we invite everyone listening and participating today to contribute the resources, to get involved personally, involve your cousin, your uncle, your aunt. This is the showdown time. So with that kind of introduction, and again stressing, do see the LaRouche webcast on the site. That is, it's www.larouchepac.com, LaRouchePac.com, which is the archive version of his July 20th discussion with people around the world and his keynote, which I think was Rohatyn is Satan. You definitely want to know about this. And otherwise, I think Dennis should just kick things off on wherever he wants to begin. The events in Mexico, the meaning for the world. Thanks.
Yeah, sure. Thanks, Marcia. 6 days ago on Sunday, somewhere between 1 million and 1.5 million Mexicans took to the streets midday Mexico City time. With a long, 9-mile-long march, and then a demonstration in the central plaza of Mexico, the Zócalo. That's the single largest demonstration in recent Mexican history, perhaps in all Mexican history. They were called out by the candidate Andrés Manuel López Obrador, who was involved in the recent July 2nd presidential elections in Mexico, who, according to the official count in Mexico, was the loser in the elections by a tiny margin of 0.6%. López Obrador is very credibly charging fraud in those elections, and he's presented legal challenges, court challenges, and a tremendous amount of documentation. Fraud committed by the candidacy of Felipe Calderón, who is the candidate of the Felix Rohatyn faction of the world. This is the synarchist bankers who would like to impose upon Mexico and the world the policies of free trade and genocide, which have brought the world into a total financial disintegration crisis and would produce absolutely catastrophic results, not only in Mexico, but across the border in the United States. Now, that 1.5 million Mexicans were brought out nominally around the issue of vote fraud. But what actually has them in motion, and LaRouche has described this as a revolutionary period, a revolutionary movement, a mass strike movement going on in Mexico, what actually has them out in the streets and moving is the fact that they have absolutely had it with the destruction of their country that has gone on for the last 24 years, the total devastation of the Mexican economy imposed on Mexico by the North American Free Trade Agreement, by the banking policies of the Wall Street crowd and the City of London crowd and the policies of the IMF, the economic policies which have created 50% unemployment, real unemployment in Mexico, and the economic policies which have driven 10 million or more Mexicans into the United States as economic refugees, desperately searching for some kind of survival under the conditions of desperation that they face in Mexico. Now, this mass strike process in Mexico presents tremendous opportunities and tremendous dangers as well. The problem here, the point that LaRouche stressed in his webcast, which I think is the key point that needs to be made for this audience in the United States in particular, is that Washington, the Bush-Cheney administration, or allow me to correct myself, the Cheney-Bush administration, were complicit and played a primary role in the election fraud in Mexico and the attempt to impose on Mexico this fascist, synarchist Calderón government. If that happens, LaRouche said, if this occurs, there is going to be such an explosion in Mexico because of the economic crisis and so on. And that combined with the outrageous right-wing racist bills being presented in Congress here in the United States around the border question by Sensenbrenner and others, that you are going to have utter chaos both on the Mexican side of the border and inevitably on the United States side of the border as well. And just to quote what LaRouche said last Thursday, do you want the whole United States torn apart from the inside because you're negligent on this issue? And he said that the Bush administration has played a critical role in bringing this about in Mexico. The contrary policy, which LaRouche represents both here in the United States and in Mexico, is what he laid out back in 1982, which is the policy of Operation Juarez, a document that he wrote at the time, which we can discuss further down the line in this discussion. But there definitely is an alternative to this. There's one other extremely important lesson for the United States and for the Democratic Party. If you mobilize against vote fraud, such as the sort which has occurred in this country in 2000 and 2004, if you mobilize as the Mexicans are doing and López Obrador are doing, you can actually turn around a fascist offensive. And if they're fighting in Mexico, ladies and gentlemen, where's the Democratic Party? Should they not be lined up behind LaRouche a little more seriously than is now occurring? So there's a very important lesson on the Mexican question in numerous regards. So I'll leave it at that by way of opening remarks.
Okay. And one thing, Dennis, maybe you want to amplify. Let me ask you this while Freddie and Natalie ask anything you wish or throw something in here. But the kinds of outreach, the kinds of things that López Obrador has called for in the last couple of weeks, could you just go into that, meaning what he's asking people to do? What's involved in this?
Yeah, his last, in the last rally, the 1.5 million person rally, he laid out three next steps to be taken. The first is that there would be another demonstration, which will occur a week from tomorrow on July 30th, back in the Zocalo in Mexico, and he called for twice the number of people to be there. The second thing he called for was that there be encampments, groups of people that gather at the 300 electoral district offices in Mexico across the country where the ballots are being stored pending a vote-by-vote recount, which is what he's demanding, because he wants to make sure that no further fraud or tampering occurs. And also he wants those encampments to serve as meeting places where the population in general can be informed and can be discussing the policy options for the country. The third thing he called for is peaceful civil resistance. And he didn't explain that any further at the time. There's been a lot of discussion in Mexico. I got a report early this morning from our people in Mexico, from the LaRouche Youth Movement down there, that in a radio interview today, in the face of hostile questioning by a journalist who was asking him, aren't you calling for violence, López Obrador said, no, my movement is like that of Martin Luther King and of Gandhi in India. We want change. We want revolutionary change, but we want it to be brought about peacefully. So that was what he called for at that meeting. He has on other occasions raised the central economic issue, without which, I'll just state it frankly, if that issue is not raised, this mobilization in Mexico is going to fizzle out. No matter how bad the fraud, no matter how outrageous, people will not mobilize like this and put their very lives on the line simply for something like stopping vote fraud. They will do it to completely transform the situation of the country, in particular on economics. And López Obrador has, on occasion, raised that issue, not in the systematic way that is necessary, but that's what the LaRouche Youth Movement in Mexico is busy organizing around, to make sure that he does do that. López Obrador has said, for example, that Mexico must follow a debt renegotiation strategy like that followed by President Kirchner in Argentina. And to summarize that, Kirchner told the International Monetary Fund to go take a long walk off a short bridge. He told them to go jump in the lake. He paid off the entire IMF debt. He said no to their policies. He did a sovereign unilateral write-down of 70% of Argentina's public debt. And he's involved in a general policy all across South America of building for infrastructure projects and development. And internationally, his government has called for the creation of a new Bretton Woods, which, of course, is associated with the name of Lyndon LaRouche. So there's a real basis here for linking up what is happening in Mexico, the activities in South America centered around Kirchner, and, of course, the movement led by Lyndon LaRouche in the United States in the tradition of Franklin Delano Roosevelt. Mexico has always been the keystone nation for United States foreign policy for the Americas. Roosevelt had it that way, and most importantly, Abraham Lincoln in the 19th century had an extremely important working alliance with Mexican President Benito Juarez at the time around the idea of the respect for Mexico's sovereignty, but aiding Mexico at the time to expel from the country French Habsburg Empire invaders who had literally invaded Mexico, installed Maximilian on the non-existent throne of Mexico, but they created it as an empire, and brought synarchist domination and control to Mexico, something Juarez never accepted, but he was able to get the French thrown out of the country based on the support which Abraham Lincoln delivered to him at the time. And that is the model that LaRouche has talked about repeatedly in his Operation Juarez document, that U.S.-Mexico cooperation as the keystone for what United States policies should be more broadly internationally.
Yeah, let me just can I just ask you one thing to bring out? Because I understand that Mr. López Obrador has used the exact phraseology that is very well known to Mexico, not well known here, that Benito Juarez was writing to his family when things looked pretty bad about being able to unseat Maximilian.
Yeah, this really gives an indication of the potential involved here, because López Obrador, throughout his campaign and in his closing speech a week ago at the rally in the Zócalo, ended with a quote from Juarez and identified it as such, which is a quote that basically says, we're going to go forward with whatever we have, with whatever we can, and go as far as we possibly can. Now, this is actually taken directly from Juarez in a rather extraordinary letter. And since you asked, I'm just going to read a couple of quotes from this letter, because I think it'll give people a flavor of the kind of U.S.-Mexican relationship which has existed in the past and which LaRouche is reconstructing
and
today.
And could you give us a date here? Are we talking about during the time period of the U.S. Civil War?
Yeah, it's right in the middle of it. This is April 1865, mm-hmm. In the middle of the Civil War. Juarez, then president of Mexico, but a president who had been chased out of Mexico City by the invading French armies. And what Juarez did, which is, you know, Juarez to Mexico is like Lincoln to the United States. Every school child in Mexico knows this. The story of Juarez is that in the face of the invading French armies, what he did is he went to the presidential palace. He lowered the Mexican flag that was there. He folded the flag and took it with him in his presidential horse-drawn carriage. And he was Mexico. He took the flag and he took Mexico's sovereignty with him, and he left Mexico City, but he took the presidency and the sovereignty of Mexico to other parts of Mexico. And he survived, and he went to the north of Mexico despite the invading French armies, and then with the help of Lincoln was able to finally return properly to the presidency. So in the middle of all of this, in perhaps one of the darkest moments of the French invasion, the synarchist invasion of Mexico, Juarez writes the following to his family. He says, I praise and applaud Mr. Lincoln's inflexibility, for his victory will be all the more beneficial, though it come later, than an earlier peace won by sacrificing humanity. And then directly talking about the U.S. situation, he says, it is enough for us that the North destroys slavery and doesn't recognize Maximilian's empire here in Mexico. He says, the North stance indicated in that declaration, declaration of Lincoln's not recognizing the invasion of Mexico, that, combined with the North's own victories, will cause discouragement among the invaders and traitors to Mexico, if it hasn't already done so. And then he goes on to discuss how the enemy will quake and fear because the United States will take up the defense of the oppressed and make the traitors and invaders disappear in a single blow. The enemy knows this very well, as does most of our republic, he says, talking about Mexico. And therefore, in conclusion, Juarez says, having discussed this relationship with Lincoln, he says, it would appear that there is no option but to continue the struggle with what we have, with whatever we can, and as far as we can. That is our duty. Time and perseverance shall help us. Forward, then. No one should lose heart. Close quote. And that final quote is a quote which López Obrador has repeated often throughout the campaign period and now again in this period of demonstrations in Mexico.
Thank you. Well, could we turn to California? Freddie, what do you think? You were in Mexico last yourself, you said, when Mr. LaRouche was visiting there. But from your vantage point in California or any vantage point, what do you think about conveying to people this sense of how profound the struggle is? What are you trying to do? Oh, we may have a slight disconnect here. We don't seem to have Freddie on.
Hello?
Yeah, go ahead. Could you hear me? I'll repeat the question, Freddie.
Okay.
I was saying, you were last in Mexico not so long ago when Mr. LaRouche was there, but you're out in California. And Dennis just described the profound concepts that are being raised in the mobilization right now in Mexico and the terminology that everyone in Mexico would understand by Mr. López Obrador. But you're trying to reach people in California about the significance of this. How's it going?
And it's been challenging. Interestingly enough, a lot of the people that we've spoken to in the Latino communities in Los Angeles, believe it or not, have voted for Calderon. So that in itself has been a bit disturbing and also challenging to organize them because, you know, from one argument that they've given is that Obrador is too idealistic. The idea of him standing up against Calderon and Calderon's people seems to be way too idealistic and too difficult. Others have just denounced Obrador as just being a typical leftist, that this is the same type of propaganda that he was bringing throughout his campaign. But there have been some others that have been in support of Obrador and Obrador's actions. So from that standpoint, it's been a bit challenging. In general, what we have, what we've picked up on, is that there's been a disgust. In one case, we recently had a town meeting where one of the attendees, who was once working in Mexican politics, you know, had said, "He said to me, it's a great disrespect what's happening. The idea that Calderon and Calderon's men would just push and try to win these elections through sheer force. This is something that is" disgusting, and a lot of Mexicans here, Mexican Americans, are seeing it as a disrespect. So from that level, that kind of gives us somewhat of an opening to then really lay upon what the real problem is and what the real fight in Mexico has been, which is to destroy this, what LaRouche has called this synarchist international. One of the things that we're planning on doing is trying to raise more awareness, not just awareness, but a mobilization coming from some of the Latino representatives in the state of California to address this. As far as I know, only the mayor of Los Angeles has commented this. And unfortunately, 2-3 weeks ago, he called Calderon to congratulate him. But there is some mobilization coming from here. I myself, along with a few other members of the LaRouche Youth Movement, paid a visit to the mayor's office, and we spoke with the constituents representative of the mayor's office and discussed the situation and discussed the statement that LaRouche made in support of Obrador on the 10th of July. A week afterwards, the PRD group in Los Angeles paid a visit, on Thursday, to the mayor's office and, you know, making it known, look, this is crazy what you just did. So we've been trying to gather up some more mobilization and make it very clear to the population, not just the Latino population, but everyone in California, just make it very clear, look, the same fraud that we faced inside the United States in 2004, the same apparatus running Cheney and Bush are the same people trying to carry out this fraud and this act in Mexico, and something that we have to fight against. So the mobilization It's challenging, but it's moving. There's motion right now.
Right. Natalie, do you want to you have in mind trying to convey to people how to understand this as well and to get them to move. Is that right?
Yeah, we've been here in Houston facing a similar situation as Los Angeles, where the Hispanic and even other parts of the population don't really know what to think, and they seem to be rather in the dark about the situation. A lot of Hispanics, Mexicans especially, have been responding to the organizing like, well, Mexico's corrupt. That's why I'm here. I don't want to talk about that. Of course there's fraud. There's always fraud. And so we've been trying to convey how, well, this is actually a turning point. And look at what López Obrador has been doing and the leadership that he's been taking. It's an attempt to really convey the historical significance of this. And I wanted to ask Dennis also how to make it more clear that Calderón and the very attempt to steal the elections in this manner, how that is the same apparatus that was controlling Maximilian against Juarez.
Yeah, this is really very direct, because the party that Calderón comes from is the PAN party, P-A-N, the PAN, which came out of the old Mexican Sinarchist Union. Now, the Sinarchists and the PAN were established in Mexico directly by the Nazi apparatus in Germany, in some cases operating directly into Mexico, and in other cases operating through Spain during the period of the 1930s. That's exactly where this apparatus comes from. That's what Calderón is affiliated with at this point. So you're talking about a grouping which is directly Nazi. And when I say this, I say it because we have in our possession documents which are now public, which are documents from United States military intelligence itself, as well as other intelligence sources from the war period of World War II, which go through this in great detail. And we've published some of this material in our magazine, Executive Intelligence Review, and elsewhere. So the Sinarchists who created Hitler, who brought Hitler into power, the financial interests behind Hitler, are exactly the same interests that are behind the Calderón and the Bush-Cheney crowd today. For example, when you're talking Sinarchist bankers, you're talking about people like Felix Rohatyn and the bank Lazard Frères, which he's part of. Now, Lazard Frères, we've documented this also, as some of our listeners know. Lazard Frères was directly responsible in France, including its head, André Meyer, in supporting the Hitler takeover of France under the Vichy government during the war period. And in fact, again, United States military intelligence files name André Meyer by name as the person, one of the people on their list of highly suspicious people to be watched, because they were Nazi sympathizers. They were working with Nazis. Now, André Meyer was the man who, as head of Lazard Frères, directly cloned and was the godfather of Felix Rohatyn, of Lazard Frères. In fact, Meyer has referred to Felix as, quote, my son. I would refer to him as a son of a bitch, but he referred to him as my son. And Rohatyn and those banking interests, which are in the process of penetrating the Democratic Party as far as certain people will allow them to do, are exactly the same financial interests that are behind Calderón. I'll give you one or two quick examples to not get too detailed. But for example, the banking interests in Mexico, such as Citibank and then a couple of big Spanish banks, Banco Santander and Banco Bilbao, these banks, which have taken over and control lock, stock, and barrel the Mexican banking apparatus, who, by the way, were the big financiers and backer of the Calderón campaign, those bankers, especially in the case of Santander Bank, are directly owned and run by the Royal Bank of Scotland. The Royal Bank of Scotland is the Queen's Bank. This is the very center of the British monarchy. This is the center of old European continental synarchy. So you're talking about the same apparatus. You're talking about the same fascist economic policies which were applied once already in the 20th century in the case of Hitler and Mussolini and Franco. Those are the exact same interests that are involved in the case of Mexico today. And I think the important issue that we've got to get across to people, and you know, this is a challenge in Mexico too, not just in California or Texas, to get across to people that the issue is not a question simply of vote fraud. Sure, there was vote fraud. But the problem is it's vote fraud to implement a policy which is fascist, which is economic fascism, literally and in every way. And if those policies are applied, if that is allowed to happen, we are going to have such an explosion, both in Mexico as well as inside the United States, especially on the border states, that the people now who say, oh, no, I don't know, I'm not interested in politics, everyone's corrupt, will wish they had never said that and will wish they had acted sooner. We have got to get them to act sooner now with that historical understanding of what's going on.
Dennis, I have a question. In response to that, two questions. One, what exactly, specifically, can we here in the United States do to support the fight that Obrador is leading in Mexico, aside from moral support? Like, is there anything specific that representatives can do? And my second question is in reference to the relation between the Cheney-Bush administration playing a role in the in this situation in the elections in Mexico. One of the things that I've heard, and I don't know if it's true or not, is that Dick Morris, I guess an advisor within the current Bush administration, also worked within worked with Calderon in Mexico. So are we looking for something specific in that sense, or is there another type of connection that we're looking at?
Well, as in all of these kinds of situations, you have the broadest historical, philosophical, and other connections, and then somewhere or other, there is always the check stubs. And Dick Morris is one of those check stubs. Dick Morris, as you say, he actually was an advisor involved in trying to wreck the Clinton administration from the inside. He represents the interests. He's usually associated as an advisor to the Democratic Party, and he would be associated with the Felix Rohatyn type of Democrats, quote unquote, those who are busy penetrating him. Dick Morris, of course, as would be expected with people like this, eventually was dumped, among other reasons, for a sex scandal. But I won't go into that. This is a family show. But Dick Morris, yeah, you're right, exactly. He was at an office in the presidential palace in Mexico under the Fox government just now, which was the same party as Calderon, and was an advisor on the Calderon campaign. And he was instrumental in carrying out or recommending a really dirty propaganda campaign that Calderon ran to say that if López Obrador were to win, this would be a danger to Mexico, that López Obrador would be a dictator like Castro or like Hitler or like Chavez in Venezuela or something like that. So, yeah, there's a direct connection that way as well as a broader philosophical one. What should we do in the United States? Well, look, this I think takes us directly to the issue of what is actually going on here. To really understand what LaRouche is talking about in terms of this potential of the danger of an explosion and what the solution is, you really have to think of the name of Benito Juarez and the policies associated with Juarez in three historical periods at the same time. One is that period around Lincoln and Juarez, which I just read a couple of quotes on, which indicate the kind of relationship which did exist and has existed historically between the United States and Mexico in our better moments of both countries, combining forces, joining hands to destroy the common enemy, the synarchist bankers who are out to destroy both countries. In the case of the United States, the synarchists behind the slaveholders of the South, the British-sponsored slaveholding interests. In the case of Mexico, a direct military invasion by the Habsburg Emperor. Maximilian. But repeatedly over the course of United States and Mexican history, for example, in the 1930s and 40s, there was a very close working relationship between President Franklin Delano Roosevelt and General Cárdenas in Mexico, which allowed Mexico to nationalize its oil and to use it to develop its own industrial base in the country under the protection of Roosevelt. Roosevelt is the one who supported and protected Mexico in this regard, and his good neighbor policy is widely respected and loved still today in Mexico and across Ibero-America. So historically, we had that Juarez-Lincoln period. The second point that needs to be kept in mind is 1982, when LaRouche issued his policy document, Operation Juarez, which established the basis for a return to the kinds of policies of Lincoln and Juarez under modern circumstances, that Mexico should ally with the countries of Ibero-America to renegotiate, to force a bankruptcy reorganization of the world financial system, to pool their debt into credit instruments on a long-term low-interest rate basis to foster great infrastructure development projects, and that the United States should participate in that activity in Mexico and in Ibero-America as a happy and willing partner, as the United States did under Lincoln and under Roosevelt and so on. So that was LaRouche's proposal in 1982 with then-Mexican President José López Portillo. It was in 1982, at the end of López Portillo's administration, that Wall Street waged vicious warfare against Mexico, against López Portillo, and since that time, Mexico has been economically destroyed by those financial and banking interests. Now, today, Operation Juarez is returning to Mexico, and the issue is to forge an alliance between the forces in Mexico that are in motion around López Obrador and the LaRouche-led Roosevelt tradition in the United States to put Mexico back on its feet industrially and economically so that the job creation that is required in Mexico occurs, and thereby the fundamental questions of the border migration question can be resolved in the only way possible, through economic growth on both sides. So I think what we need to do in the United States, to address your question specifically, is we need to get people to both apply pressure on the Mexican situation so that the vote is recounted. In other words, there is a very specific question here. The vote should be recounted. But more importantly, to put pressure on the United States so that we, too, return to our senses and get back to a policy of the sort LaRouche is proposing around the Economic Reconstruction Act, the auto sector reconversion, and so on, and to develop a relationship with Mexico based on that revamped economic policy. We must have a new Bretton Woods. We must have an economic recovery in the United States. And that, combined with defending Mexico's right to sovereignty and democracy in the face of this synarchist assault, that's what people in the United States can do. You have the largest minority in the United States are now Latinos, are people of Hispanic origin, as we well know. You guys in Texas and California know it better than anybody else. So there is a tremendous natural base there inside the United States to apply the necessary pressure as well on the Democratic Party and others to go with the LaRouche policy. The issue here is LaRouche. That's what has to be done. And LaRouche's policy on Mexico will fall right into place.
Do you have more follow-up questions, Freddie?
No, not at the moment.
Let me just throw one thing in here. We still have a third of the hour to go, I'm glad to say. But on the when Dennis is talking about pictured different times of history almost simultaneously, I think it was when Franklin Delano Roosevelt's vice president was elected. Would that be around 1938, more or less? But not yet inaugurated, Henry Wallace from Iowa. He got permission from FDR to get in his Plymouth and with a two-car convoy drove from Iowa to through Mexico. He didn't want a lot of publicity. He'd made a point of learning Spanish. I think he only learned Spanish and Russian. Nothing wrong with German, French, and Italian, but he learned Spanish and was able to speak in Spanish to address the legislature of the federal government of Mexico. So this was concrete, constant, this kind of respect and dignity and collaboration. So I think that's just one nice mundane example. I think Henry Wallace was inspecting the origin of corn and maize in the world as he went along from village to village. But do you have something, Natalie? There are some more questions we had in advance.
Well, I did want to maybe comment or ask Dennis to comment about the just the insidious nature of free trade, because what I found, it was pretty striking over my last trip down to South Texas, where I grew up. Since NAFTA has been affecting the area, you've had free trade in the area, there's been a real surface buildup of the infrastructure where they've cleaned up the roads. There's businesses springing up everywhere. There's the highways are beautified. There's parks. And it's really, but then in the organizing, talking to the people, you ask them about this, and they say, well, yeah, you know, things look nicer, but it's, we have to work more, and our families are not, I have to struggle to feed my family more now. We don't have this factory shut down. We don't have, you know, we don't have this factory over here. We don't have manufacturing. There, so, and then in talking to the elected officials and the congressmen in the area, there's a lot of justification for the policy, saying, well, look at all the business that it's bringing. Look at what this has done to the area. And when it's clear to me that this is a facade for a feudalistic policy. And so I'm just wondering, how is the biggest deterrent, are the elected officials, are they scared? Are they terrified of this anarchist apparatus? To what level of consciousness, how conscious are they of this? Or are they thinking of it in more simplistic terms with certain pressure and bribery? And so that's what I wanted to ask Dennis.
Well, I think it's all of that. And I think that that what happens with a lot of people is that they think they believe what they think they're supposed to believe, what they've been told is the popular thing and the right thing. And, you know, after all, everybody believes in free trade and globalization. You believe in it too, don't you? And no one dares to say anything contrary, not because they've actually thought it through or looked around or actually looked at the economic statistics, not at all, but simply because they think that that's what everybody says and they don't want to be ridiculed by popular opinion, which thinks that that's supposedly the way to go. The second you actually start talking to people about the actual physical economic reality of what's going on, such as, for example, in the animations that we have, people go completely crazy. You'll see this just organizing people on the street, and you'll certainly see it with elected officials. I'm sure this has happened with you guys also in your organizing activity, because all of a sudden it dawns on them that what they've been talking about and what they've been told is nothing but a facade, exactly as you're describing, a Potemkin village. And the underlying physical economy, the second you start looking at physical economic parameters, food per capita and per square kilometer, railroad mileage per capita and per square kilometer, production of steel, machine tools, energy, all of those things, the second you look at the actual physical economic parameters, both in the United States and Mexico, you, of course, very quickly realize that it is not going well, but that the economy has been in a downward spiral. And we've documented this in the case of Mexico, and we've documented it to a fare thee well in the case of the United States. So I think that the people say that they believe in globalization and free trade because they like to be overheard saying that. That's the right thing to say. Any confrontation of those ideas with reality, which is what we have to bring into this thing, immediately can pop that bubble. And reality itself is asserting itself. And that's why I think LaRouche has been insisting lately that people, that we have to transmit to people the bad news, that is to say the reality of how bad the situation actually is, to rattle their cage, shake them up. That's not, bad news is not the same thing as being pessimistic. The point is, you can present to people bad news, which is the reality of the situation, but in an extremely optimistic fashion, as LaRouche did in his Thursday webcast, which Marcia rightly urged everyone to listen to if they haven't yet, and listen to it again if you listen to it only once, because there is an answer and a solution to this. Free trade has been an utter, complete, unmitigated disaster for both the United States and Mexico. In the case of Mexico, I have the numbers at my fingertips. We've studied this thing very closely. Mexico's unemployment has risen under free trade from about 30% in real terms of the population to over 50%. That's the reality of the situation. The wages of people employed in the maquiladoras, in the free trade areas, have dropped, have gone down over the last 15 to 20 years, not increased. There is no actual physical infrastructure that has been built on the Mexican side of the border in these horrific shanty towns, which are actually more like concentration camps. Employment in manufacturing in Mexico has fallen by approximately one-third, from very low levels to abysmally embarrassing levels, and so on and so forth. And exactly the same process has happened on the United States side, as we now see with what's going on with the shutdown of the auto industry and just the dismantling of our industrial capability. What's happened, what free trade means, is globalization in the sense that finance capital and finance interests take the front seat and any actual physical economic capabilities are progressively dismantled. And the only thing that remains, it's like a body that gets taken over bit by a cancer. And at a certain point, the cancer goes rampant and takes control over everything. And if you have a stupid economist who looks at the economy the way a quack doctor would look at a patient who has cancer and just looks at him from the outside and says, well, but sir, you're growing. Everything looks fine. Well, the only thing that's growing is the cancer. And that's the actual reality of the situation around free trade and globalization. We have to tell people that that's the case. We have to give them the historical examples. But most importantly, we have to give them an optimistic answer and solution, which LaRouche provides to this, because you'd be surprised when people get optimistic and think that things can be changed, all of a sudden they wake up and realize that things aren't quite as rosy as they're pretending that they are.
Right. You don't have to adjust to what was seen to be hopeless. Natalie, do you have more in that line?
No, that's it for now.
Because, Dennis, let me ask you, throw in one thing here. In terms of what you said López Obrador said about there should be encampments at the 300 voting districts throughout the whole nation and civil disobedience, you said he said this morning along the lines of Martin Luther King or Gandhi, there was a report, for example, there was a civil disobedient protest line drawn against a bank in Mexico City. Is this indicative of anything, or it's just one of the things that got reported?
It's one of the things that got reported, and I actually don't think a whole lot has gotten off the ground yet. I think that people are still trying to figure out what direction to take this in. I found the protest in front of Banamex appropriate because Banamex is owned by Citibank. The head of Banamex, Roberto Hernandez, was one of the biggest supporters of the Calderon Sinarchist crowd, and Hernandez and his bank Banamex were one of the great beneficiaries of the repeated bailout of the Mexican private banking sector by the government with billions of dollars that they just handed over to the private bankers, but which is now part of the debt which is saddling the government, i.e. the population, the citizens of Mexico. So I think it's certainly an appropriate targeting. He's definitely part of the crowd in Mexico tied into the Sinarchists. What needs to be done is that the answers and the solutions to this crisis have got to be pointed out. Mexico's problems are not internally generated. This is not a problem created by Calderón. Calderón is a third-rank puppet who probably has no idea even of who his own puppet masters are. Maybe he does. I don't know. But he definitely is not the puppet master. He's a mere puppet. And it's very important for Mexicans to understand, as it is for Americans, who the real puppet masters are, who they are historically, what the Sinarchist apparatus is. Because only if you look at that, only if you really stare that in the eye, and if you look at the hell which their policies will mean, can you come up with an alternative and a solution to actually turn this around? I think there are people in Mexico who are prepared to fight at this point. I know that the reactions we're getting from To the Limb in Mexico are excellent. I just got a report this morning from down there. Freddie, you probably know this because you were down there and did these deployments with them, but every Thursday they go in front of the Juarez Monument in downtown Mexico City, and they spend most of the day there organizing. This Thursday they had an incredibly successful organizing day. Everyone was interested, and people were interested not just in, the passing leaflet. They wanted LaRouche's ideas. They bought books. They bought magazines. And actually, the income generated from the deployment this Thursday was substantially higher than it has been on previous occasions. You've been on those deployments, haven't you, Fred?
Yes, and given, and that's something also I do just want to reiterate, is the fact that LaRouche, as far as I know, inside the United States, has been the only American statesman that has given the support to Obrador and to have a vote recount. And one of the things, we were at the demonstration where there was 1 to 1.5 million people last Sunday, and 35,000 copies of that statement were distributed. And the response that we had received was very open. People themselves that had received the leaflet said, I'm going to make copies of this and distribute it to my friends, to my neighbors. I'm going to distribute it on my own. So at the same time that Obrador may be fighting this and challenging this vote fraud, we're bringing in that higher moral question, bringing in that higher moral idea of and uniting Latin America around LaRouche's economic policy. So, and the fact that, I mean, right now it's just an extremely open situation in Mexico, especially in I mean, there's a lot of people that would come by every Thursday and say, yes, I spoke to you last Thursday. I know I'll see you guys here next week. So we're getting greater and greater recognition. But as of right now, it's just an open situation that we can just take in Mexico.
Thanks. I'll throw one email question in here that Santiago asked, and because it's on particularities and on a pattern. One thing is he makes the observation that isn't it indicative that you have so-called close elections like Ukraine and other places where you had dirty operations connected to Cheney, Bush, and the people behind them. But secondly, on particularities, is it the case, is there anything that should be noted so far about election fraud? There are particular companies like Choice Point that were involved in the voter rolls that may be suspect and connected to the U.S. FBI. I know another one, though, is you're talking about Sinica's connections, and there's a Lazard connection that was head of the equivalent of the Federal Election Commission in Mexico. Is that not the case?
Yeah, there's it's actually fairly interesting because the Federal Electoral Institute of Mexico, as it's called, the IFE, has among its board of directors or among the people involved in it are people who are very closely associated with the PAN and with the Sinarchist banking crowd in general, including a number of them are tied to that same bank, Banamex, which is owned by Citibank, which we were discussing previously. So that's curious. And then there's the rather humorous note, which is that the head of the IFE, the Federal Electoral Institute of Mexico, actually his major habit and pastime as an individual, believe it or not, is magic. He's a magician.
Okay.
So that tells you a little something in any event. But in terms of Santiago's question, which he sent in here, one of the parallels which he notes, which is well taken, is the United States 2000 and the United States 2004 elections also, where you had very close races which were decided by very strange swings in votes at the last minute and so on and so forth. I think that there's very little doubt that the higher levels of the electoral fraud apparatus that were in place in Florida and in Ohio were also operating in the case of Mexico. The details need to be worked out and documented by the people on the scene. I'm not in a position to document that, what the equivalent of the hanging chads were in Mexico. But there were plenty of such instances. There have been a million things that have been covered.
Let me ask you, the banner that we see that says vote by vote, meaning you should have a real recount, not just a tally or a guesstimate.
Yeah,
is that what you're saying?
What López Obrador is saying is straightforward, and anyone who wasn't trying to hide something would agree to it right away, which is that he's documented in some detail that the vote totals on the tally sheets, which were turned over to the central authorities by each of the voting districts, the tally sheets do not match the actual paper ballot votes cast in numerous thousands, if not tens of thousands, of those specific voting polling stations. And they've documented and proved it in numerous cases. One of the regular patterns is that López Obrador actually would have, say, 133 votes inside the packet, but the cover sheet wouldn't say 133, it would say 33. So what they're calling for is very straightforward. Let's recount the entire vote, which sounds like exactly the right thing to do if they care to clear the issue up.
Right. Well, we have a few minutes left, and I would invite Freddie or Natalie to jump in at this moment or any time in the next. But I wanted to give Dennis the opportunity to just say you've been in touch with LaRouche, who put out a statement on Mexico on July 20th. He answered questions, on July 10th after the on the issue of the what's happening in Mexico, and then took questions July 20th. But overall, you've got the potential strategically, historically, for what's happening with Mr. Kirchner in Argentina and how Mexico can be part of that. How would you summarize this?
Yeah, I think that we just have a very wide-open situation internationally. The very nature of the crisis and the danger of the crisis creates a situation in which people's thinking can radically shift. And this is one of the real lessons about what's happening in Mexico. We're in a revolutionary situation. We're facing a mass strike type of process where people who thought one way Monday afternoon when they wake up on Tuesday morning will be much smarter and much more moral people than they were 24 hours before. And it's not because they drank some sort of magic potion. It's because there are social processes underway, mass movements underway, which give people a sense that they can actually do things with their lives that they previously could not do. And therefore, they are open to thinking in ways that they previously weren't and open to acting in ways, more moral ways than they previously weren't. And I think that what's happening in Mexico is very indicative of this kind of process. That's the same kind of process which we are also on the edge of inside the United States as well. And the Hispanic population along the border area in the United States may very well be one of the important transmission belts of that kind of process to occur. I think that's why LaRouche was so emphatic in his webcast about what the significance would be inside the United States for an explosion in Mexico, which will unquestionably occur if they attempt to impose these policies of the ANCIAN regime, these free trade policies which are destroying Mexico. So the LaRouche movement and the youth movement in particular are in a unique position precisely because we are on both sides of the border, as we are internationally, and are capable of, therefore, putting together a political movement which is capable of addressing the actual problem which nobody else is capable of doing. So I think we're entering sort of uncharted waters in one sense, which are very exciting uncharted waters. It poses fundamental tasks and questions which populations face only in very dramatic moments of history. That's the nature of this historic period. We are facing, as LaRouche has said, a complete collapse of civilization where an entire culture, an entire economic policy, an entire civilization is disintegrating. Most people may be unwilling to even admit that's happening at this point, but that's mainly because they just can't think of anything to do, what they could possibly do. We're facing the utter collapse and demonstrated dysfunctional capability of the baby boomer generation, that 20% which LaRouche has been talking about. That has absolutely not worked. It's gotten us into the destruction of the most vital part of the United States industry. It's gotten us into an exploding war in the Middle East, which is at this point going completely out of control. It has us in a situation where Mexico may be blowing up and across the border as well. And we have a situation where there is going to have to be dramatic change implemented to stop this policy. These people, these synarchists, cannot win. They can only take the world down with them. We have the opportunity of winning. It's by no means guaranteed, but it's the only shot that exists, and it's the only thing that's worth doing. It's the only thing that makes life fun and enjoyable, is to do something which actually contributes to returning to humanity the sense of what we actually are. That's now palpable in Mexico in a way that it wasn't before, and that is exactly what's coming to this country. It falls on us, the LaRouche movement, and especially the LaRouche youth movement and its supporters around the country, to be the leading force in pulling and kicking the United States population as a whole behind those policies of LaRouche to make sure that we actually are able to make that transition.
Well, we have less than 60 seconds, but Natalie, that's the kind of thing you're mapping out after, I guess, in the timing of things. You had in June the rejuvenation underway of the Democratic Party on the key border state of Texas, and then bang, you had this election in Mexico. But is that how you would, what in a few seconds, how would you would characterize what you plan to do in rejuvenating the institutions and the people there?
Well, I did have a quick comment, something
Good.
That I thought was very profound. I spoke with someone from an organization that has done extensive investigative work into Diebold and the voting fraud in 2004.
Uh-huh.
And she said that they have actually changed their whole strategy based on what happened in the Mexican elections. Because when López Obrador took the leadership that he did, they realized that you need a mass movement in the United States to deal with vote fraud. And so they've actually taken a change in orienting their organization more towards outreach, as well as the congressional work that they're doing. Now, as far as what we're doing, it's becoming more clear that we just need to educate the population and continue the outreach ourselves.
Well, that seems to be the last word, and I think we're all for it. And I thank you very much. This has been July 22nd, The LaRouche Show. Do tune in July 29th. You know we're from 3 to 4 in the afternoon every Saturday, Eastern Time in the United States, and you're already there on the website. For those on the phone, www.larouchepub.com. And I thank you, Dennis, Freddie, Natalie, and we'll sign off today. This is Marcia Mary Baker. Thank you very much.